From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. California Senator Kamala Harris has just released her health care plan as part of her presidential campaign for the Democratic nomination. Harris, who has been polling among the top four candidates, wrote in a post on Medium, "In America, healthcare should be a right, not a privilege, only for those who can afford it. It's why we need Medicare for all." But unlike Senator Bernie Sanders' plan to immediately expand the existing Medicare plan to everyone, Harris wants to transition to an expansion over 10 years. Meanwhile, Sanders, who is also a front-runner candidate for president, traveled to Canada over the weekend with about a dozen Americans who have type 1 diabetes. Their mission was to obtain insulin at a lower cost than the exorbitant prices set by the pharmaceutical industry in the U.S. The second Democratic debate is set to take place over 2 days this week, although Sanders and Harris will debate on separate days. We turn now to Dr. Philip Verhoff. He's a board member of Physicians for a National Health Program. Welcome to the program, Philip.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So first, what do you make of Harris's plan? She has sort of been for Medicare for all, but then qualified it during the last debate when asked which of the candidates supported Medicare for all. She raised her hand, but then later after the debate, she sort of qualified and kind of walked that back. And now she has a policy paper out saying that she supports Medicare for all, sort of.
Yeah, the devil is in those sort of details. And effectively, she's really walked back from what Physicians for a National Health Program and those of us really advocating for universal health care, she's really walked back from what we want. This is a markedly different proposal from what Senator Sanders has proposed. And we think that this would basically be more of the same and would neither help with covering everyone, nor would it help with the costs of healthcare.
Well, let's take a look at what she specifically said. She, first of all, is using the term Medicare for all, which is quite interesting. So on the face of it, it sounds like she's in the same, on the same team as Sanders.
Yeah.
And she says she has a plan to do it that involves getting everybody on to or expanding the current Medicare system over 10 years. What's wrong with that?
So what the problem is with this messaging and this labeling, and one of the things that those of us that are advocating for true Medicare for all push for is real improvements in the current Medicare system that we have. You know, right now, seniors get Medicare and it's great, but it by no means covers everything. And they're still responsible for significant co-pays. They need to get additional, insurance to effectively cover what traditional Medicare does not. And so a cornerstone of the single payer movement isn't just let's get Medicare for everyone, but let's improve the Medicare system that we have to make it much more simple. Right now, people are needing to purchase additional healthcare coverage to fill in the gaps that Medicare is leaving them with. And we would really advocate for bringing up the Medicare system. The senator's plan effectively wants everybody to get Medicare Advantage for All. And Medicare Advantage for All is a program where the government basically pays private insurers to administer Medicare. And you might think that this is a great idea, but one thing you have to remember is those private insurers, at the end of the day, are most interested in shareholder profits. They're not interested in covering patients. And so what that results in is a tremendous amount of administrative waste for Medicare Advantage plans, arguably poorer outcomes, greater costs, and ultimately worse coverage. You know, another way that a Medicare Advantage plan limits their costs is by limiting the number of doctors that patients that have Medicare Advantage can see. They increase the cost of ambulance rides. They increase the costs to the patient of inpatient hospitalizations. So Medicare Advantage for All doesn't really solve the problems that the American people have, which is paying too much out of pocket, going bankrupt as it is. And so to hinge her plan on Medicare Advantage really, I think, hurts the American people instead of helps them.
So she says that that is one part of her plan. The other part is that when we pass my plan, all Americans will immediately have the ability to buy into Medicare. What does that mean?
You know, this is effectively the notion of the public option, which is to say, hey, why don't we just let Americans purchase Medicare insurance? If Medicare is so great, let's let them buy into it. But here's the problem with that, and I see at least a couple of problems. One, that retains the administrative complexity in the current system. You know, one of the problems in this system is that there are literally dozens and dozens of different insurance plans in addition to Medicare. And so that complexity is part of what drives the cost of healthcare in this country. You know, any physician's office must employ people simply to interface with all of these different insurance companies. So Medicare public option doesn't really fix that problem. It just adds another player to the mix. But the other problem, and I think it's a little bit more insidious, is if you're a private insurer, you don't want to take care of patients with medical problems because you have to basically pay out and you consider that a loss. And so what effectively happens when you introduce a public option is private insurers do what we call cherry picking. They pick only the healthy people to include them in their coverage, and then they do what we call lemon dropping. They drop the lemons that are really expensive patients, shunt them onto the public option plans, and that ultimately costs the government a tremendous amount more by having all of the sick people covered by the government public option and all the healthy people covered by the private insurers. You violate the entire concept of pooled risk that underlies insurance.
If you're a private insurer, your goal is to make money. If you're the government, your goal is to ensure that people don't, that people don't go without health care. I mean, it's...
That's right.
At least in theory. So the other part of her plan is a 10-year phase-in system that will automatically enroll newborns and the uninsured into what she calls this new and improved Medicare system, which would give all doctors time to get into the system and provide a common sense path for employers, employees, the underinsured, and others on federally designated programs such as Medicaid or the Affordable Care Act exchanges to transition. This, you know, sort of sounds like she's responding to the standard critique of Medicare for All or single payer system, which is that people who have private health insurance through their employers like their plans and want to keep their plans and would oppose Medicare for All. What is a problem with this transition plan?
Boy, a couple of things. One, I don't know that people really love their private insurance that much, right? I have to re-enroll every year, and I never know if my employer is going to change my insurance plans or change who they're covering. So I think it's quite frankly a myth that people love their private insurance. But beyond that, let's think about this a little bit. The Affordable Care Act was written into law less than 10 years ago. Think about how much that act has changed due to the changing political dynamics over the last 10 years. It's hard to imagine that this 10-year transition would get by unscathed. I think the other problem is, I think this destabilizes the market significantly more. You ultimately have a lot of time for private insurers to figure out how to game the system most effectively to their advantage.
And also 10 years is longer than two presidential terms.
Right, exactly. And a whole lot can change in 10 years. But perhaps most importantly, let's think about how Medicare was originally rolled out in the late 60s and early 70s. Ultimately, they rolled it out in a year. They covered literally millions and millions of Americans, and it didn't result in horrible things happening in the healthcare system. A recent paper was just published in the Annals of Internal Medicine that didn't show that, or that showed that people didn't suddenly start using tremendous amounts more healthcare, that it didn't bankrupt hospitals like people are saying it would. And so if we can roll it out 50 years ago in the course of 1 year, I don't see why we shouldn't be able to roll this out now, given that we're so much more technologically adept than we were 50 years ago.
Philip, do you feel that Kamala Harris is co-opting the idea of Medicare for All, which is very popular, to try to gain the votes of people who want it while retaining the existing system as much as possible?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's happening. Now, you could argue that that's actually a testament to progressive activism, right? So 5-6 years ago, none of this was on the table. And it was only because people like Senator Sanders have introduced the concept of Medicare for All into the political arena that people are now needing to do to address this. But it's falling prey to the fact that, you know, Medicare is really a complex system. And if you pick the parts of Medicare that are actually the least effective and push those forward, I think we'll end up with something that's equally bad. But, you know, they know, Senator Harris's campaign knows that this is something that's on the minds of the American people. And obviously, this keeps coming up in the debates. She's surely going to be asked about it again, and she needed to have an answer. But it's an answer that I think pulls the worst of our Medicare system and promotes that rather than the best parts, which is, you know, universal coverage for everyone, you know, and potentially protecting you from bankruptcy, you know, and ultimately being sort of fair and just for all people rather than based on your ability to pay or employment or whatnot.
It seems as though for those who are not as well versed in the details of how a Medicare for All plan should work versus what Harris says it should do, it isn't easy to distinguish between the two. And this is where the danger lies, that you have a candidate like Harris who will speak to the issues that people want to hear that have been brought to the table by progressives, only to then very likely not deliver, leaving people yet again disillusioned by Democrats and disillusioned by politicians who promise one thing and do another.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, and we see this playing out in the polls. If you follow polling of single payer, you know, when people say, do you think the government should, expand Medicare for everybody? People say yes. But then when you tell them, what if that means losing your private insurance? And people are a little bit more hesitant because people have sort of bought into the idea that private insurance is the norm here. And that, you know, if you have a job, you get insurance. And the only way you get insurance is having a job. And quite frankly, you know I have family members who are working 2 and 3 jobs that don't have health insurance because it's simply too expensive and their employers don't offer it. And in effect, this is partly why we still have, you know, literally more than 30 million people uninsured in this country. And so, you know, ultimately, I think that this is part of the messaging that we struggle with in the single payer movement. We really want, you know, to push Medicare for All, but we want the best parts and not the worst parts of it.
So it's too bad, of course, that Senator Bernie Sanders and Senator Kamala Harris will be debating on different days during this week's Democratic candidate debates, because if anybody could sort of challenge Harris on the details of her plan, it would be Sanders. And even Warren is on the same day as Sanders and on a different day as Harris. Harris will face off against Joe Biden, and Joe Biden thinks that the way things are run right now is just fine. Or I should say, he's a proponent of strengthening and preserving the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare. So compared to his position, Harris is certainly the sort of progressive alternative. And it's very unlikely that the problems with her plan will come out during the debates, right? Unless one of the panelists questions her.
I think that's right. And we haven't seen any of the other sort of higher ticket candidates really pushing this beyond Sanders, Warren, Harris. Senator Cory Booker had signed on to support Senator Sanders' bill as well. I'm not sure how he will ultimately represent that coming up. But you're right. You know, Joe Biden is basically pushing for let's continue to build on the Affordable Care Act. Let's build up the public option. But this does nothing to rein in costs. You know, ultimately, one thing that people sometimes forget is that insurance company stocks basically skyrocketed when the ACA was passed. Because remember, the Affordable Care Act said you must buy private insurance. I mean, why wouldn't they love that? You know, that basically means more people being mandated to purchase their products. But remember, their only role in this world is to generate money for their shareholders. They could frankly care less about covering people and covering the costs of people's care. And so continuing to build a healthcare system on that backbone just seems incredibly irresponsible, dangerous, and hurtful for Americans.
What do you make of Sanders's attempt to raise awareness of the high cost of prescription drugs by taking this caravan of Americans to Canada to purchase insulin? These are type 1 diabetes patients.
Yeah, you know, we see this all the time. I work in the ICU, and we literally have patients consistently admitted to the hospital because they run out and can't afford their insulin. You know, in a way,
how inaccessible is insulin in the United States today?
It's become so expensive. So the cost of insulin have tripled, quadrupled in the last 10 years to the point that people simply can't afford it. And then you couple this with the fact that there are lots of new insulins coming out, and maybe your insurance plan covers one type of insulin but not another, but the best insulin for you is that one that's not covered. You know, effectively, we're creating a bigger problem with this. Now, I like that Senator Sanders is raising this awareness. I think it's a little bit of political theater, to be honest with you, because the solution is certainly not for Americans to be running to Canada to, you know, to purchase the drugs that they need. That in a way to me is irresponsible. But as an illustration of how broken our healthcare system is, you know, I fully support demonstrating just how messed up this is. The reality is we pay more for the cost of drugs than anyone else in the world, and we pay more out of pocket than anyone else in the world for our drugs as well. And that is a reason that people are ending up in the hospital because they can't afford medications, or quite frankly, dying for lack of those medications. So it's a huge problem. And under a single payer system that we propose, that PNHP is supporting, that would include the ability to negotiate with drug makers to establish more reasonable pricing structures, you know, as well as making sure that all patients have first dollar drug coverage for the medications that they so badly need.
And by the way, apparently a number of Canadian physicians and professional groups and patient groups asked Sanders to not take their drugs because Canada already experiences drug shortages. But there is this, you know, it's a thing. It's called medical tourism. Americans may travel to Canada to buy diabetes medication. They travel to Mexico for dental work. And this is really, really tragic, that the world's richest country has a situation where people can't afford to get the healthcare right here.
You know, it's interesting. In Canada, their Medicare system doesn't cover the cost of drug plans. So people still have to get separate insurance to cover drugs. And yet their prices, their costs out of pocket are still dramatically less than ours because almost all of their other healthcare costs are effectively covered.
I'm wondering also what you make of a new piece of news that just came out, that a government survey has shown that in spite of all the criticisms of healthcare in the United States, that 90% of the population has coverage, apparently. And I think some are sort of spinning this as a measure of success of the Affordable Care Act. I was surprised to see this report.
Yeah, you know, it's all spin, right? Before the Affordable Care Act, there were around 50 million people uninsured. Now there are 30 million because people were able to either purchase insurance on exchanges or Medicaid was expanded for some people. But that means we still literally have 30 million people uninsured. And at least by one estimate, this means that around 30,000 people may be dying per year for lack of health insurance. And to me, that's completely unacceptable. You might say, oh, 90%, that's pretty good. But you look at all the other developed countries in the world, and they're closer to 98, 99, 100% covered. So, you know, it puts
and I understand, you know, this doesn't really cover the issue of people being underinsured.
And that's exactly the other problem. The notion of underinsurance is that you still have to pay around 10% of your income for healthcare. Now, if you make $50,000 a year, that $5,000, that's going to really hurt, right? Because that's money that you can't spend on rent, that you can't spend on food, that you can't spend to live your life. And at the end of the day, underinsurance is becoming a more insidious problem, bolstered up by the ACA. If you remember, the ACA created four different tiers of plans: bronze, silver, gold, and platinum. And those bronze plans are terrible plans. They still saddle people with a tremendous amount of out-of-pocket costs, so as to being somewhat useless, right? If you still have to pay literally a $5,000 deductible before your insurance even kicks in, what the heck good is that insurance doing for you anyway? And I assume that if we build on the ACA, we're going to see more underinsurance, which means more people making that choice between healthcare and food on the table, more people dying for lack of insurance, more people going into bankruptcy because they can't afford their healthcare. I mean, here's the thing. We don't know when a bad healthcare situation is going to come our way. We don't know when we're going to suddenly get hit by a bus or develop cancer or have some other terrible illness. And so the notion that that we should be responsible for the first $5,000 is just crazy. And yet that's what those ACA plans are really hinging themselves on.
Well, Dr. Verhoef, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Give out the website for Physicians for National Health Program.
Yeah, it's www.pnhp.org.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
My guest has been Dr. Philip Verhoef, board member of Physicians for a National Health Program. And we've been discussing Senator Kamala Harris's health care plan that she's calling her version of Medicare for All. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.